where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Once again, we are here, Pancakes and Power Slams. Hosted by Crave Wrestling, I am Chris Featherstone, along always with Ryan Fuqua.
Yep, what's going on, folks? We're going to try to be a little better than WWE programming this week, so the bar is not raised too high for this show, I guess.
Right, yeah. we're going to excel that by about 10, which still isn't a very high bar, so, yeah, we've already beat TNA, I believe, so. But thanks so much for listening to us. You know the drill if you listen to us every week. If this is your first time, thank you so much for your support. Thank you so much if you listen to us every week. The number is 347-884-8452. Once again, 347-884-8452. We're going to real quick. We got so much going on with Over the Limit and Raw. just real quick, something as far as the this week's news to make mention of is that apparently there's reports, and I actually wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report. It's got a lot of hits. Ric Flair and Alex Shelley, both in TNA, they have quit TNA. We'll see. Allegedly, they're supposed to be they both are heading to the WWE. Ric Flair, more of a Legends contract role, and Alex Shelley for the resurgence of the cruiserweight division that's supposed to be airing on the network. So we'll see. Flair wasn't happy in the first place, and Alex Shelley, when he was with the Machine Guns, they were one of the best teams ever, but. The Hogan and Bischoff era, they really didn't see the talent. They really didn't see the potential in them to be just stars like they were beforehand. And last week's errors, just a couple clarifications or confirmations of a couple things that we thought was the case last week. Big Show debuted in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre in 1999, and Kane's WrestleMania record is indeed 6-8. I'm actually looking forward to soon to write a article on the worst records of WrestleMania history, 7 or more. But I will say this: I don't know if anybody knows this or really paid attention to it, but Jeff Hardy has never won a WrestleMania match out of 5 attempts. So
wow.
pretty little interesting tidbit there. Yeah. So yeah, it's Jeff Hardy out of anybody. 0-5 at WrestleMania.
Wow.
So yeah. So let's go here to Over the Limits. A lot to talk about here. It was a pretty stacked card, WrestleMania type of match number. And feel free to go to the chat room here. We always flood the chat room every week, and some really good comments are come out of the chat room. And like I do every week, if we see that comment is worth saying, we'll definitely say it. So go ahead and flood that chat room here. So we will go to Over the Limit. Like Ryan said, a great number of matches altogether, and The first pre-show match was Kane versus Zack Ryder. You know, it's I'm glad that Kane got the win, and you know, it's pretty sad for Zack Ryder, what we saw on Over the Limit and SmackDown. Just his direction is going nowhere fast. I mean, it's going the wrong way. From, I mean, the guy still gets pops too. I mean, but it seemed like his time's over. And well, we'll go further into when we get to Raw. It seems like we may be getting a change of direction in Kane. Something that Ryan's been calling out for the past few weeks of something that may happen. So we may get that wish. So it was a, you know, decent match. I'm glad that Kane went over, and you know, I'm sorry for Zack Ryder's direction right now.
I can't even be happy for Kane winning this match. I mean, because it's the boring, pointless. It's the Ryder effect now. Man, it's done for me with Ryder. I can't get down with it anymore.
Pull the plug.
Yeah, I can't. And I was so, like, when I first started watching these Z Long Island stories, mm-hmm. I loved it, man. The guy was funny, and now it's just like it's watered down. I don't know if he's been told to do something else, or I don't know. It just doesn't feel right, and I don't know. Just he keeps losing, of course, whenever he is on TV. But I will say this, out of the three pre-shows so far, this was the one that I was just, I don't care. It was the worst of the three.
Oh, yeah. I'll definitely agree with that. Just because the other two to me, well, the other two were title matches, right? The tag title was the first one, and then last month was the U.S. So, yeah, probably because there was an extra incentive for the pre-show. And I think I said that last week on the show. Just it was an incentive for the pre-show. There were title matches, but you know, even with this now, it's just, I mean, Kane and Ryder, outdated feud, and really led to nothing. So, yeah. And then we saw the Battle Royal entrance go in at the pre-show to lead to the actual pay-per-view, and then after that, they did the opening credits. So I think maybe for the first time ever, it actually started at 8:15 p.m. what it seemed like was the opening credits, but I'm definitely very happy about how this Battle Royal turned out and what turned out after that. Actually, I'm very happy with that. The entrants were the Great Khali, Miz, JTG, Ezekiel Jackson, Curt Hawkins, Zack Ryder, Michael McGillicuddy, Yoshitatsu, Tyson Kidd, Jimmy and Jey Uso, Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre, Heath Slater, Titus Young, Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, Alex Riley, David Otunga, William Regal, and Christian. Good to see Regal in the ring. I've got a soft spot, you know, just in my heart for Regal. He's just one of the first, just that really smash mouth wrestling style that him and Finley share. You know, it's just Regal and Finley, man, they're always going to have a soft spot in my heart just because they're that good, and they're mentors, they're wrestling mentors. You know, always good to see Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. You know, those are my boys now. And Hawkins and Ryder, I thought they were going with some type of NXT angle where they're not even there anymore, but I guess they realize that people don't watch NXT enough. So Ezekiel Jackson, he actually was a Twitter or interview or something about how he's going to recover from his woes. So he has admitted that his career is going nowhere. I think he had that interview or that comment a few weeks ago. And lastly, just as far as the entrance, JTG, what? I mean, where did? I mean, I haven't caught NXT in a few weeks, but the new gear, he's got some type of mohawk type of braids with some just regular tights now, and I mean, what exactly are they trying to portray him as? No longer Crime Time. He's no longer that type of character. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. The gear, you know, isn't the gear, not so much. It's just a very surprising transition to that type of gear. But the hair to me is just kind of off. If he wants to keep that gear, he's got to change the hair somehow. And he's always been really good. He's a really good wrestler. I just don't understand why they don't do anything with him. Probably because they're just overcrowded with heels in the first place. McGillicuddy too was a heel that's in there that they just can't do nothing with. Slater, McIntyre, yeah. Jinder Mahal. I mean, just.
Yeah.
The list goes on as far as the heels that was in that paper, the Battle Royal, and Christian coming back was great, and him winning was even better. And I called it. I said, you know, looks like Christian is going face, and when Miz and Otunga was the last two people there, and they played the role of tag teaming up against Christian, I said, okay, I'm loving this. And then they tried to throw a wrench in there when he was looking at Santino and kind of making it seem that he was going to fight him. But there was still a part of me that thought that said, okay, I still think that they're going to switch it up. So definitely happy that Christian won that Battle Royal.
Oh, yeah, I'm way happy. Face Christian. I'm glad, like you said, glad he won the Battle Royal. If he would have came back as a heel, man, that would have been tough. I just don't know where he would have fit in or anything. So
yeah.
Coming back as face, IC level, I mean, that's perfect for where he's at right now. It's, yeah, no pressure, you know.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Pretty good. And I kind of did. I liked the in-progress opening. It was okay. As long as I'm just glad they still did the fireworks and intro, so
mm-hmm.
I was a little concerned for a second, like, oh no, what is this? So
yeah.
That was pretty cool.
We saw the first official match of the pay-per-view. That was the first, the Battle Royal was the first unofficial match. We saw Truth and Kingston defeat Jack Swagger and Dolph Ziggler sometime, and then we see a little bit of a little bit of animosity at the end between Vicky's team, Zig Swag, as Ryan would call them. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about four things that could happen and four things that should happen before the pay-per-view. And one of those things that should happen, I wrote, that is that Truth and Kingston should keep the tag team titles for a considerable amount of time, at least in my opinion, at least until one of the big four, SummerSlam or Survivor Series, because they have an overage of heel tag teams now. They have Hawkins and Ryder, who are getting more TV exposure as a tag team, and now as a, you know, they're heels. And then you have Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. You have Primo and Epico. Honestly, I can't think of one other face. The Usos are a face tag team, but they don't get as much exposure as the other heel tag teams. So it definitely would be a good idea for Truth and Kofi to keep them and go through their whole cycle of feuding with a different team. For instance, now they're on, you know, Ziggler and Swagger, and then next, you know, could be Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. You know, I'll be fine with, well, maybe even Hawkins and Ryder, because they're kind of assisting Laurinaitis, and Laurinaitis could give them a tag, you know, tag team title shot. I'll be fine with that. So they definitely should keep their the titles for a while and revive the tag division by going through the heel tag teams.
Yeah, I get it from that point. The, you know, the gauntlet of heels and all the heel tag teams. I mean, that's perfect. I just don't know how much I'm into this team. Like, and I don't know why. You know, separately, both of these guys, I love them, but as a team, I don't know I don't know if the chemistry is all the way there for me.
I agree with that.
But from your standpoint, I do like that. That would work. But for this match, man, this match was really good to me. It felt like a kind of Mania opener-esque, the way Ziggler and Swagger came out. I mean, the show-off was in full effect, should I say.
Yeah.
So it was. Yeah. I really did like that. So hopefully that's more their thing when they're on pay-per-views. A little more show-off than extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kofi's Trouble in Paradise spot at the end was pretty good on Ziggler. I like that. Yeah.
Mr. Seller Ziggler, man. He can
Definitely, for sure. We saw a little bit more coordination, Truth, and Kofi's gear. Truth had the blue and yellow spray paint on the pants, so I guess they're trying to do something with the coordination there. So then we saw Layla and Beth Phoenix. Now I'm gonna rant a tiny bit about this. First of all, we get the same Layla music. You're not enough for me. .. It's just, you know. I said it last week on the show. It's not good music for her. She's a face, and that's how much. That's enough said about that, because, you know, I can go on and on about that. She needs to change her music. And then here's my thing. Here's the biggest thing about this match that I totally did not like at all. Now, I keep saying this. I like Layla. I'm cool with her being champ. I'm not, you know, too opposed to it. Like I said, her entrance, her return was flat just because of the karma thing. They're not going to use karma. They want to face champion. Okay, Layla, she's a good athlete. But how in the world are they going to set up this big Andre Hogan-like karma Beth Phoenix feud if Layla gets a clean win on Beth Phoenix and she has a bum knee? I just don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, she's a lot smaller than Beth Phoenix is. She has a bum knee. Beth Phoenix was working on the bum knee, but she gets a clean win. It would make much more sense for me for Beth Phoenix to lose by disqualification. Now, we didn't even need to see Karma back. That's okay. I get it. You don't want to use Karma right now, but you're going to have to set her up for a big feud with a heel. And so it's kind of tough for me to see that, because now since the Bellars are gone, it seems like the males and the females are totally switched. There's an overage of a face divas now. You got Kelly, Alicia Fox, Tamina Snuka when you see her, Layla. The only heels is Beth Phoenix, and Eve isn't wrestling anymore, so I can't even think of another heel diva right now, even. I'm sure there may be one that we may be overlooking, but we may not be overlooking them. May not be looking over the diva. So how in the world are you going to set up this, you know, karma return? I hope that she doesn't come back as a heel. I mean, even with the baby thing, and she's already going to get, you know, a lot of sympathy because, you know, her baby was stillborn in December. So she's going to get that type of sympathy. She's going to get that type of pops. And so bringing her back as a heel just wouldn't work, at least initially. And so why are you setting her up for basically failure? Because you have Beth Phoenix, who has the ability to be that, you know, as Gorilla Monsoon says, you know, the irresistible force against the immovable object type of feud. But
yeah,
Layla pins are clean. So I don't get that. Beth Phoenix should have beat Layla by disqualification and just beat her down, and it could have led to a match at No Way Out. You know what I mean? And so it would have been a better outcome than a clean win for me.
Yeah. You could say we don't need karma right now, but the fans in that arena were chanting, "We want karma." At once.
Oh, yeah.
It was really loud. So that right there shows you that they are going the wrong direction with the Divas division right now. So, I don't know. And like you said, I know you mentioned Kelly Kelly as a face. Where the heck has she been? Like, it's just random. It's Layla and Beth Phoenix, really. Like, I don't know. They need Karma to come in and do something. So,
yeah, definitely.
But, I mean, this match, though, the arena got flat. They took the steam out of the opener real quick with match. Like, you just had that nice tag opener, and then it was just like, you're not enough for me. Just flat. Simple as that. Only good thing, I got to hear another shucky ducky quack quack.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Booker T, for saving our lives in that specific case there. So the good thing is that the next match to me was the match of the night. That was the four-way between Sheamus, Orton, Jericho, and Alberto Del Rio. It was just an action-packed match to me. I loved it. It had big pay-per-view, big four pay-per-view written all over it to me. Just the, I mean, you name it, just the spots and just the finishers and avoiding the finishers and Jericho had, I believe, Randy Orton in the walls and ducked at the same time Sheamus's bro kick and. I absolutely loved it. Of course, I didn't like the end. Jericho takes the fall again, and I it was just a really flat ending because he just picked up Jericho out of all those, you know, big, you know, spots and all those really really good, you know, edge of your seat moments. He just picks him up and puts him in his finisher and takes the fall. So that was really odd for me. But just Jericho, I mean, I wrote an article about Jericho's woes, and in the past 2 years, he has only won one pay-per-view, and he was still pinned by Heath Slater. It was the SummerSlam 7-on-7 Team WWE versus Team Nexus, and he was pinned by Heath Slater. So he has not won a single pay-per-view. Or he has not took the fall or pinned anyone in a single pay-per-view since WrestleMania 26. And I wrote all the pay-per-views that he lost, just going from the pay-per-view after the WrestleMania in 2010, he lost, which was Extreme Rules, Cage Match to Edge, and then Evan Bourne, a tag team match with The Miz. They lost against the Hart Dynasty. The list goes on and on. So 2 year streak with no Jericho pin. So it's, you know, a lot of people are happy that he's just unselfish like that and willing to put people over. But I posed a question, you know, to wonder if, you know, if this is really tarnishing Jericho's career, you know, and I believe that he's Hall of Fame bound no matter what. I mean, that goes without saying, but just a win-loss record like this the past 2 years, that can tarnish anyone's career, you know, no matter what anybody say about it. I'm sure that people would continue. I'm sure that people would say something about John Cena if he won one pay-per-view and out of 10.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? So they would say something about that. They would say something about Rock. They would say something about Triple H. You know, the list goes on. So I'm not a fan of it. You know, I'm cool that Jericho puts people over, but, you know, who does it really help in the long run? He really didn't. He didn't spark up Punk's career. He didn't spark up Sheamus's career. You know, so I don't think. In the long run, I really don't think it's doing much of a benefit for Jericho to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, that's an amazing stat, though. It's a long time, but definitely wish he would have been able to bring the World Heavyweight title back to Raw with the old switcheroo, as we stated. But, no, the amazing thing in this match is that Lillian Garcia was able to get through all four introductions without messing up at all. And that's a little shot at her because she's been catching a lot of heat lately.
Yeah, she actually had an argument with Justin Roberts backstage recently.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, it's crazy. But, see the early Orton-Sheamus back and forth. Of course, I'm sure that's setting up for the next month or two. But I'm actually came around on those two, so might be interested in seeing that feud. But other than that, yeah, Paige was really, really good during this match, man. Like, I know it's not hard to do when you got four superstars in a match, but I think they did really well. So none of these guys are slouches anyway, so you know what you're getting.
Yeah, that's a good point there. It's just out of the four, though, Alberto Del Rio just didn't seem like he fit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard for me to say that because I was a huge Alberto Del Rio fan a couple of years ago, but he just didn't seem like he fit, you know, and it's kind of sad to say that, but definitely mid-card level for me. So, yeah, then we I called this on my article before the pay-per-view happened. I knew that this was going to happen. Brodus Clay versus The Miz and Miz lost. I knew that was going to happen. Two things that I want to say about this match is not really a point to really get too much into it, but Brodus Clay, his humorous, you know, slash Bill DeMott gear was just hilarious to me. He just surprises me every week. He had some type of LL Cool J crust groove type of boombox a few weeks ago. And then the humorous gear was just hilarious to me. And then the best Miz moment of the year to me. Now, it was cheesy. It was, nobody, you know, thought that this was going to happen, but the whole dancing, you know, he's trying out for the fake remake of the Thriller video. I thought that was hilarious. It was like I said, it was cheesy. It had a lot of criticism, but to me, the way that Miz has been going now, that was probably the best thing for him, because the whole comedic heel type of thing for him, you know, may work a lot better than the serious, really, and, you know, outdated catchphrase, "I'm the Miz and I'm awesome," that's just buried to the ground. So to me, this is the best spot of the year for Miz. It was hilarious, and he got the most attention, you know, out of all year for me in this spot. But it seemed like this may continue, and I'm cool with it. You know, it gives them both a spot, and I'm cool with the feud.
Yeah, I was okay to see the dancing bit this time. But, I mean, for me, the match, though, without the build or anything, I know I called for it, but I just couldn't get into it. There's just another, I knew Brodus Clay was going to win. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way Miz wins without any build-up in an impromptu match with Brodus Clay. And especially not when, you know, it's not like it's a Raw or a SmackDown where everybody's watching it. It wasn't a squash match, so, and that's okay. Clay's athletic enough for his size, but I'm still not all the way impressed. I need a push for Clay to be the face that can be taken seriously. I'm not saying he has to beat on his chest and go berserk, just be taken seriously. So he could maybe get away with having the same music and be taken seriously. Like, I really think this guy can work. They just, I don't know, the gimmick, man. I just... Stop with the squash matches and get this guy a legitimate feud. I think as soon as he loses, it may sound crazy, but as soon as he loses and, you know, gets a rematch with whoever he loses against, then that'll really get the ball rolling.
I can see that. I can see that. I agree with that. As far as
fight turning serious, you know, a loss.
Yeah, I just, my biggest thing is just doing away with these squash matches. I mean, it's not.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just not leading to anywhere. I think that, like I said before, you know, on SmackDown they're kind of doing the same thing. They're just bringing a bunch of superstars up and nothing for them, you know, and they're just participating in just matches, you know, a la Superstars 1990. Like, I feel like I'm just watching, you know, Superstar versus Jobber again, and I thought those days were over, but yeah, I guess not. So we get to a lighter moment here, Christian versus Cody Rhodes, and this is one of the best moments of the night for me. I was definitely... everything about this I liked. The match was good. Just Christian and Cody Rhodes, you know, that match on paper seems like it's going to be a great match, and it was a good match. And then really just glad to see Christian champ. He's actually number two now. He was tied with Triple H and Kofi Kingston for three reigns, and now this is number four. So he's in second place, and he's not even halfway to Chris Jericho yet, but you know, it's good to have that. It's good to get away from the fold of three reigns and be a clear cut second place now. So definitely kudos to Christian. Like you said, he needed to be a face. I was opposed to him turning heel against Randy Orton in the first place, because every single time the past few years that he was a face and he turned heel, he just hit a glass ceiling. The other time, when he was just a heel, before he went to TNA, he was feuding with Goldberg and John Cena. And, I mean, it was just a glass ceiling. Like, he wasn't going to win. He wasn't, you know, he was just a spot filler for them, to job to them. So I still don't see why they keep pushing him, you know, making him heel. He just, him as a face to me just works. I mean, he won his...
Yeah.
You know, first world title as a face, and you know, he basically carried the ECW, you know, for a while as a face, and you know, it works for him. So just turning him heel, just I wouldn't do it. I mean, I definitely would have him be that baby. If they're not going to do it with Jericho, I would definitely have him be that that baby face, that pure old school type of, you know, fans are cheering him face that makes that slow climb back, you know, up to a world title. I would love to see that.
Yeah, and like I said, being on the Intercontinental level right now is just perfect for what they've got going on with him, what they're doing with him. Like I said, because there's no pressure. He's not getting the old... you're the world champion, but you can't hold up keep the ratings up. So this is perfect. And then it's also perfect because this means that Cody Rhodes needs to officially move on to the world heavyweight title before it's too late.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. This kind of, for a point during this match, I was a little boring. And I don't know if it was Cody or Christian's fault.
Yeah,
but
I agree with that.
He needs to move on before it's too late. They better cash in right now. Build up to a SummerSlam match or something. I know that's, 4 months away, but they can do it. He just needs to become a monster heel, something. Maybe get over on Orton. I don't know.
The unfortunate thing, I wouldn't be too opposed with Rhodes and Orton again, but the bad thing about this is that I just don't see I just don't see it happening. I just don't see.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, you know what I mean. You said before it's too late, and you know,
think it's too late or too not too early.
I just don't. See, I mean, out of all the heels that's going on now, especially, you know, the turn that we're going to talk about here soon, I definitely don't see that happening anytime soon, and that's a tough one. So he deserves to be the main event level, but don't see it happening anytime soon. So be sure to call in. The number is 347-884-8452. I'm sharing the over the limit reviews on this week's show, and we're about to go into the Raw, and got a lot of things to cover here, so we're going to go for it. But we definitely always invite your calls and what you think. 347-884-8452, and just any time, like I said, check out the flood the chat room and put your feelings about the pay per view there. And you know, like I said, if it deems worthy to be said, it definitely would be said. So we will go on to CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan. Split crowd throughout the match. I was very surprised, but in a good way, that they actually gave this match a half an hour. So it was one of those things that it was just the internet dream match, and ROH was pretty happy, I'm sure, about it. And you know, it deserved to have a long match. If they would have just cut this in half, it definitely wouldn't have done it its due service. So, but split crowd, good match overall. Weird finish, though. I don't know if it was a matter of a miscue, by Punk, because for some reason it seems like, a Kurt Angle Undertaker finish back in, I don't remember was that Judgment Day or Backlash? Judgment Day or Backlash?
I think it was a SmackDown going into one of those pay-per-views.
Oh, really?
I believe.
Taker tapped at the same time that Angle's shoulders were on the mat. So,
I think that's why the triple threat between Taker, Angle, and Rock happened. I believe
And that was Judgment Day of what, 02? Judgment Day 02? Judgment Day 02 sounds about right.
Yes.
Yeah, Judgment Day 02. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it seemed like they were trying to do that, but, he taps about 1 or 2 seconds after the pin, so it wasn't any controversy about it at all. Somehow they turned it into some type of controversy, but I really didn't understand that. So overall, it was a good match, but that spot to me was just really weird.
Yeah, don't try to sell us on that tap, because that was bad. I don't even know why they would mention it still. I mean, it was blatantly that off. But, good match, of course. Say it like I said with Jericho, would have liked to see Bryan take the WWE title back to SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
And another stat that means that Bryan and Punk, both ROH guys, would have won both the WWE and world title, so
yes.
That'd have been pretty crazy. Probably the only two ever.
yeah, that's true.
CM Punk's McMahon impression needs some work. he was a little off with this McMahon impression before the match. This should have been a submission match. And you said 30 minutes, and it should have been a 30-minute submission match. I'm guessing, with they keep talking about it, maybe that's what it'll be next month. So it's probably inside of a cage, since it's no way out. Predictable WWE booking at its best.
Yes, absolutely.
Daniel Bryan, man, he's an unbelievable talent. That's insane. I did not know about this man. I'll go ahead and say it. I did not know about him until he came to WWE and was on NXT. And I'm still amazed that they put him with The Miz as his pro. I mean, he is light years ahead. Miz couldn't even hold his, lace his boots.
Yeah.
It's insane to me, man. Like, never. Never. Daniel Bryan can lose an arm and still be better than The Miz. Bold statement, but come on, man. That's insane.
Yeah.
Wow. Just like him putting Cavall with Laycool.
Why did you do that?
I don't know what they were doing with those NXTs, man. They must have known that. Let's put the best wrestler.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because that's another ROH alum. You know, ROH and TNA for Cavall, aka Low.
But then again, Wade Barrett did have the fast track to being with Jericho.
Jericho.
But
yeah. The thing is, and this, I'm cool with that. I'm cool. I was cool with Barrett and Jericho, but you know,
like
you said, it just seems like they already put a glass ceiling on, you know, the ROH talent because they knew the capabilities that they had. You know,
Brian is amazing. Oh, absolutely.
That's why, you know, following him in ROH, and I saw gold when I saw him, you know, in ROH, him and just a bunch of other people, Nigel McGuinness, even Samoa Joe, and really Christopher Daniels. ROH for you. That's pretty much how it boils down to. So, yeah. Then we saw the why in the world is this on pay-per-view? I wouldn't even watch this on SmackDown. You really think that, you know, people who paid for this pay-per-view would be happy to spend their $40? Ryback versus Camacho out of anybody, and it's just that the WWE wonders why their buy rates continue to go down the drain. And why in the world? First of all, there was two non-build matches. Well, essentially three, but at least one of them was good. You know, there was a build within the pay-per-view. But you had two non-build matches with Brothers and Miz and Ryback and Camacho. Why would anybody want to buy a minor pay-per-view if we see this crap? This was just a wrong place to put a match like this in, you know, on the card. It was awful. You know, the only good thing that I get from this is that I'm going to admit it. This might be a little tough, but I actually like Ryback's music. I like his entrance music. It fits, you know, it fits his type of character. I think it was a good choice of music for his type of character. The name of it is ridiculous to me. The name of the song is Meat. And I'm thinking, you know, when I think of Meat, I think of Sean Stasiak back in the PMS days. You know, with Terry and Jackie, you know, he was Meat, and I'm like, okay, well, Ryback can keep that title, and he can keep the squash matches too, and he can keep out of a pay per view if they're going to play something like this. So I was totally 100% opposed to this.
Yeah. It was actually, the third impromptu, non-promoted match? This one, Brodus Clay and Miz, and I guess the 20-man Battle Royal we didn't know about until, maybe a few hours before?
Yeah.
So, technically fourth, because that led to the IC match, the title match.
Yeah.
It's funny because I seen his armbands, and once again, he had the color on there, and I immediately thought of Nexus. It's going to be something every time. Took his first fall. That was pretty crazy, so I don't know if it was an accident or he meant to fall, but that's the first time he's hit the ground since he's been back on WWE programming.
I think Heath Slater had a little few shots on him on SmackDown. Last week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But you know, it's squash matches. So we miss them anyways. So
tells you how much I pay attention to. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I will say at least he's facing wrestlers, or I'm sorry, superstars on the roster. So.
Yeah.
No more jobbers. That's some type of direction. This is where, like I said, Wade Barrett and him would be a perfect startup feud. So,
yeah.
Because Wade Barrett could use his wits versus having to use somebody like automatically. We think Mark Henry would have to feud with him because he's big and strong. And,
right.
Yeah. So. They kind of dig themselves in a hole with his character.
Yeah. Yeah, Wade Barrett would be a good choice, though. I don't think I'd consider Wade Barrett, but I definitely think that Wade Barrett would be a good choice. Running low on time here, let's go with the main event. I've got so much to say about it that I'm not going to say much, honestly. That's how bad I feel about this. John Cena versus John Laurinaitis. By far the worst main event of the year, and the worst pay-per-view main event in recent WWE history. Just the commentary spot during the match, although it was funny, it was ridiculous to me. And just match and how it went, it was just so predictable. Just so happened Big Show was out, and the entrance, the exit that Laurinaitis was in, he wasn't really physical with them. It was just so predictable to me, and just really everybody knew about it, but it was just awful to me.
Yeah.
And I hope that they never ever do something like this again.
Yeah, very predictable to the educated wrestling fan. As you said, the commentary spot was hilarious. Kind of boring, like, for most of the way through. So, yeah, reminded me of the Bret and Vince at the WrestleMania a few years ago, where Bret was beating the crap out of Vince, one of those boring type things. Most interesting thing, I guess, was that drunk lady in the front row that kept messing with Laurinaitis. I don't know if anyone caught that, but there was like,
I did.
They're like, hey, stop. So she was over her limit, little puddle words there.
Definitely.
Other than that, man, what I wasn't for sure. I didn't even want to look it up, but is Cena 1-4 at pay-per-views this year?
I was thinking of that stat too. the only one that, well, he won, he's 2-5. He's 2-1, I think. 2-2-1. Because Kane was a no contest in Royal Rumble, beat Kane the next month at Elimination Chamber, lost to Rock, beat Lesnar, and lost to Laurinaitis. So 2-2-1. So, but yeah, speaking of that, great segue to my little stat that I picked up from the pay-per-view. Goes to show that not a single pay-per-view this year has had a world title main event, one. And two, Cena has been in every main event, of course, except for the Royal Rumble. Cena's been in all of them. I just told you the matches that he had, and all of them were main events. So, including the match, let me reiterate this, including the match versus Kane at Elimination Chamber that was an ambulance match. So you had a gimmick match at a different gimmick pay-per-view, which was
And he hasn't been champ, but they're still shoving him down our throats. The main event feuds.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. So there's your stat. There's your stat for you to chew on right there, and for all you listeners, for you to chew on. And for some reason, there's a big part of me that feels like we might see a main event number 5 for him. So next coming No Way Out. So yeah, we were going to Raw. Speaking of Cena, he gets his pro, he's gets a promo, starts with a promo and says, why is this happening, blah, blah, blah. Gets interrupted by Laurinaitis in a wheelchair. Well, he actually gets interrupted by Eve, who introduces Laurinaitis in a wheelchair. Then he introduces Big Show, and before that he confirms his match at New Way Out versus Cena. emotional promo by Show. I don't know if he had some type of coaching or something, or just, you know, I could just see Vince. I think they had something to do with it. I think they showed in one of these documentaries when he was in the office with Draws, and, you know, he was just giving a pep talk, you know, he's going to puke, you know, and he giving him pep talks in his office about cutting promos. So I could definitely see him doing that for Big Show, like, you just got to give it your all, and he did. I'll give it to him. And his angle was the people had no sympathy for him, so I guess that's what y'all concluded. I guess what creative concluded at the end. Speaking of creative, big blunder by creative and John Laurinaitis. He said that he signed Big Show on Saturday, but the pay per view was Sunday, and the stipulation was if any active superstar came and interfered, they're fired. So technically, the Big Show should be fired again. So that was a big blunder from John Laurinaitis. Cole came back and patched it up and corrected throughout the show. And but yeah, that was a big blunder by him. Then Otunga comes out and challenges Cena, and you know, Cena says, you know, paraphrasing, you don't want to do that, blah, blah, blah. And he beats Otunga. Then he gets attacked by Hawkins and Rex, and Titus O'Neil and Darren Young, and then Sheamus comes to save the day. You know, out of all of this, and as long as it was, Big Show versus Cena at No Way Out is really what we got from it. And, you know, even from that, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm really not interested.
Yeah, only thing.
Yeah, so we will actually go on forward here to Santino and Ricardo Rodriguez. They have a little transaction, and then Santino introduces Alberto Del Rio. That little spot was actually pretty funny with the whole Cobra, and just Santino on the mic is just hilarious. He just starts talking about how he just starts talking about his Cobra it wasn't a real Cobra, it's just the Cobra on his hand. It was pretty funny. So then they announced that Raw will go 3 hours starting July 23rd, which I'm just not happy about that at all. So you were talking about the Cena and Orton. I'm sorry, Cena and Big Show and Laurinaitis and Otunga and Eve segment.
Yeah. Technical difficulties there. I apologize. The head scratcher for me was the run in by the two tag teams, and then Laurinaitis just said, "What are you guys doing? I didn't approve this or ask for this." So.
Yeah, definitely.
Didn't know where they were going with that one. I mean, I know they ended up being lumberjacks, but it was like, okay, why didn't he sick the dogs on them? So that was really the head scratcher of the night for me.
Yeah, definitely. So we will go on to Randy Orton versus Alberto Del Rio. Not too bad. Of a match, and but it was interrupted at the end by Jericho, so it looks like they're going to set up Jericho and Orton at No Way Out, I suppose, and I guess this is just another person for Jericho to put over. I don't know, there's a part of me that just can just imagine Jericho being, you know, in negotiations, and he's like, yeah, I want to put over Punk, Sheamus, and Orton. Uh-huh. Those are my three feuds, yeah. And I'm out of here again. You know, and this it's just so sad to me. But you know, yeah, I'm sure that he has a lot to do with it because I'm sure that they just want to have him come back just to put people over, and seemingly they just let him go ahead and do it.
But it doesn't make any sense. I thought the setup was for Orton and Sheamus, not Jericho and Orton, another hashtag super show for another month.
Yeah.
Like, I totally don't get this, other than the only other thing is the three code breakers by Jericho. So
he
at least was on top for Raw.
Right.
He can win at a Raw or a SmackDown, but not at the pay-per-view.
Right. Right, yeah, that's and he beat Sheamus on a Raw too. So I guess if anything, for you know, I'm an avid Jericho fan. If people don't know that, but so maybe I should skip the pay per views and just watch Raw or SmackDown. So we're go forward here. Daniel Bryan promo interrupted by CM Punk. CM Punk introduces Kane as Daniel Bryan's opponent. Daniel Bryan wins by DQ because he basically did the same thing that Daniel Bryan did on SmackDown, kind of pulled an Eddie Guerrero. Kane gets beat up. I mean, Kane beats up Daniel Bryan, a couple choke slams and a bunch of chair shots to the back, and Punk's come up and picks up scraps. And just two things real quick. Predictable, like you said, I even called it. At the pay-per-view, I can definitely see a submission match and no way out. And then, I don't know, man, maybe a slow turn for Kane. So I'll definitely be a happy camper if that happened.
Yeah, that'd be really good. But for this, nothing special here. It's Kane. It's always Kane whenever they say, you're going to face this guy, and it's always
exactly.
Wrong. So we knew we were getting into. But I will say the choke slams made up for the other week when he botched the Big Show fall slam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will agree with that. Then we get the Punk and AJ backstage segment, which I said I really don't hope it's leading to what it may be, the love triangle. Just please. I mean, We coined a phrase at WrestleMania with the Undertaker and Triple H match, which is hashtag pure. And we might have some Crave Wrestling shirts come out soon, which just has a hashtag pure in there. And, you know, there's a number of meetings, but specifically, though, you know, you just got to keep matches like this pure. I mean, don't taint it with just some ridiculous gimmick and just a storyline that just makes it even worse. And, you know, it's got to be pure, hashtag pure. And I think that AJ would definitely taint the storyline. And come on now, Kurt Angle and the other guy, you know, submission match, you know, back in the day, I want to see that again. I wanted to see that kind of match again without just thinking that they just have to do some type of storyline to back it up, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I don't understand why they keep doing this with Punk anyway, like, between him and Jericho and now him and Bryan, you know these two can have amazing matches and cut amazing promos on each other without putting some other type of story on it. So as for the AJ thing, as adorable as she is, no need. Just no need for this.
And the way that they're using her, I guess maybe, you know, I was talking about another heel. Maybe you can, you know, she's more of a tweener, but, you know, maybe you can put her in the heel category now. But AJ versus Karma, enough said. On to Christian versus Jinder Mahal. Here's the thing. I like what they're doing with the mid-card type of matches for the Intercontinental title. I'm okay with even them bringing Jinder Mahal because it does at least give a spot for the plethora of heels that they have, and it's a good direction, you know, as far as having Christian just defend it, you know, often against those plethora of heels. But just, you know, LOL, you know, there's my I take that phrase, I don't take that phrase lightly, you know, when I say or text or you know, type LOL, I've actually laughed out loud. And I definitely had an LOL moment at Jinder Mahal coming out, you know, just, yeah, they didn't even show the entrance. They just showed the whole ritual thing. And yeah, so the only thing I would get from this was nice Eddie tribute, Frog Splash by Christian. I guess that's his move that really solidifies him as a face. So, yeah. You know, and I'm cool with it, too, because the kill switch unprettier move, you know, I think that it's shelf worthy. So you know, it's just too much of a it's just too much for the other person to sell. You know, it's not really a snappy move, you know, as a face. And you know, I'm cool with the whole Frog Splash thing. It brings some suspense to the whole thing, and I'm cool with it. So kudos to the move of him having a Frog Splash. He's done it a lot before, but it wasn't really a bonafide finisher for him. So, but you know, if they're making it that way, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. I was gonna say, I thought I'd seen him do it before, but he said, good old Michael Cole said that this is a new move to his repertoire, and I'm like, I'm not so sure about that. But, yeah, that's Cole for you. As always, only other thing, I've always wondered if I'd like Mahal any more or at all if he had a different gimmick. Maybe he wants to be in that gimmick, you know, just shout out to his race or ethnicity, but I don't know. I just always wondered maybe something else I'd like him more, because I mean, I guess I'd nothing him right now, so I don't know. Maybe if he had something else going on.
Yeah, I can see that. Beth Phoenix, relatively squash match against Kelly Kelly. There's your Kelly Kelly appearance.
Yeah.
I think this is much needed for Beth Phoenix to build her up as a monster diva. Yeah, I mean, Kelly Kelly is a relatively big, you know, big name, so I'm fine with it. You know, it's cool, and if they're going to do anything to continue any type of divas division that makes sense, you know, I guess this was the best decision post her losing clean to Layla.
Yeah. Kelly Kelly, man, it's weird because they super pushed her and she didn't lose for like months, and then now it's like she's around. It seems like, I don't know, maybe I just don't pay enough attention to the divas, but it seems like she's around like once a month now. I don't know.
If that.
Yeah, but I didn't really pay attention to this match, but I just said to myself that the divas division will never reach the height it did during the Trish and Lita days. Never.
I think that's a consensus. That's definitely a consensus.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
I see that all the time, you know, different articles and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, they brought it up, and it went away with them.
Yeah.
Even before they were here, it wasn't like it was when they were there. So.
Yeah. They tried, you know, with Mickey James and you know,
yeah,
Victoria,
and that was their
things
fault.
Like that. Yeah,
letting Mickey James go.
Yep, absolutely. So you know, I'm coining a phrase right now, and this goes to Kelly Kelly and Miz, and anybody else that really, even Alex Riley, savor your spot. So I'm patenting that. That phrase, savor your spot, because you never know. Just in a year's time, it can just be totally the opposite in the negative direction. So
main event pre-show. Yeah. That's, yeah.
simple as that. Savor your spot. So, yeah, let's go to the main event right quick. The three people that was a mystery to Cena and Sheamus at the beginning of the program end up being Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, and Tensai, saying that on purpose there. I felt like it was going to be these three, but he is no more. There was actually reports that he's going to do a slight overhaul of his character. He's no longer Lord Tensai, and no longer comes out to his with his great Muda garb. And so it's different, and I'm actually, you know what, we made a little agreement here, no way out. And I will say this, I'm always, you know, rational and fair when it comes to, you know, admitting things, and I think this is a better direction for him. So, you know, that's pretty much, that's a surprise coming from me, but I think that the not being so gimmick heavy and taking away the Lord and taking away the garb, and, you know, I'm coming around. I don't think that I'll say, okay, well, yes, Lord Tensai, but I can rationally say that this is a better decision, a better move for him. I don't see where they can still take him with this, but it's better than we saw. So, Lumberjack match, and all the Lumberjacks were heels. I really didn't get the Charles Robertson spot. He just kept putting gloves on and taking them off. That was just kind of weird.
Yeah,
I really didn't understand that. And then all the wrestlers came in to jump. I think maybe because Tensai was bleeding and he wanted to stop the match, but he didn't, and he can't change his mind. I really didn't understand that. All the wrestlers come in to jump Cena and Sheamus, and then a bunch of faces come out. And then Cena goes to look back for the Big Show, and then talks to Lord Nidus, and Lord Nidus says he didn't see him, and he turns around and falls victim to a WMD. Now, real quick, only thing I want to say about this is just three potential feuds that I saw from the melee of wrestlers at the end. Santino and Del Rio for the U.S. title, Christian and Drew McIntyre, and Brodus Clay and Tensai. So those are three little feuds that I saw that could stem out of that, because actually Brodus Clay and Lord Tensai were fighting each other at the end there.
Yeah, that was all cool, but man, that WMD, boy, that looked like it's going to leave a mark. Say what you want about wrestling, but there's no way you can fake. I know Big Show pulled his punch, but, yeah, he got Cena right between the eyes there. That was a good one, because I did not expect for him to be right there and punch him like that. That was pretty
wrestling
funny.
Coming from Show.
Yeah,
wrestling coming from that hand. You can try to pull as much as you want, but there's going to be some type of mark. So So you know, we'll see what happens next week on Raw and how they're going to build to No Way Out. Real quick, real quick, Impact Wrestling. Just going down the card here, and what happened, we saw a Bobby Roode and Hogan promo. Says that Roode has to defend the world title next week at Open Fight Night. Bully Ray and RVD, it was basically four wrestlers vying for the spot of fighting Roode at Open Fight Night. Bully Ray takes a fall. He wins for a change and beats RVD. AJ Styles wins the Wild Card Battle Royal. And then they do the whole picture and just the ghost of video and him and Dixie Carter, which is just a ridiculous storyline to me. Jeff Hardy defeats Mr. Anderson, and then Kurt Angle defeats Samoa Joe. Kurt, I was excited about that match. I was waiting for it to happen. It was a really good match, Kurt Angle and Joe. So it was pretty matter-of-fact Impact Wrestling. Nothing really sparked so much, but it wasn't terrible. I like incentive type of matches like that. or really incentive type of programs like that, like the Beat the Clock and things like that. So it was decent overall, and I was open to the whole Open Fight Night last week, last month, and I'll be a little bit more open to it now, just because it's a world title that's being defended, and Bobby Roode said that he's next week, or you know, in TV time next week, he would have beat AJ Styles' record as the longest TNA champion in history. So I'm looking forward to see that. And plus, I actually saw TNA spoilers champion, you know, so, something like that. So I didn't go in to see what it was, but I was definitely interested to see, you know, who and what and how that panned out. So not knowing what, and then I saw a report of saying, okay, correction about the spoilers. So it's interesting to see, you know, how, you know, that panned out. I don't know what happened, but it actually brought a little bit more anticipation to Impact, and you know, I need all the anticipation possible.
Yeah. Only thing I can say here real quick is it bad that you talk about TNA, or I listen to TNA talk, watch it, and now all I can worry about is hopefully Ric Flair coming back to WWE.
yeah, that's bad, not on your part, but on theirs, for sure.
Yeah.
Pretty much says it all right there. So let's move on to ROH. Eddie Edwards defeats Mike Bennett. Post-match attack by Brutal Bob Evans, Mike Bennett, and Maria. Michael Elgin defeats Grizzly Redwood, and he goes against them, Grizzly Redwood and Kamel Dickinson. He gets laid out by Elgin, and he actually was replaced by Jay Lethal when he was no longer to compete. And Jay Lethal and Redwood end up winning by disqualification when Roderick Strong attacked Jay Lethal. And finally, All Night Express defeats Young Bucks in an elimination tag match. ROH once again, man. I'll say it every week. You know, I really wish they had a bigger stage. I love watching their product, and just the matches are just phenomenal to me. Just really great, great, great action. And Maria, just kudos to Maria. She's really honing her craft as a heel female superstar, or wrestler, or diva, or personality, whatever you want to say that. Yeah, I mean, really, really honing her craft in ROH. So I definitely think that was a better move for her. You know, she got let go, and then it seemed like, you know, didn't really know how that was going to work out. But the move to ROH was definitely really a blessing in disguise, because she's really doing a great job honing her craft.
Yeah. She's definitely a 180 from when she was in WWE, so you're definitely right. I can buy that. I can buy her character in ROH, so that's pretty cool. More Jay Lethal, and when am I going to get to see Kevin Steen again? If I'm not mistaken, he's the champ, right?
He is, but you know how it is. The taping, I believe, is 4 weeks out. Yeah, so
nice.
Yeah, so we'll see him probably after the taping, just so they can say, you know, just so the taping can line up with, you know, the pay per view. So
yeah,
but be sure to share your thoughts on the chat line. If you have anything to say, I'll definitely let them know, or if we can take a, we'll go to the chat line right now, 347-884-8452, call in, any thoughts at the end, if you want, we'll go ahead and bring you on. Until then, right now I'm going to go with the flavor of the week. Flavor of the week this week was the 10 best promo cutters of all time. Now, wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report today. Got a lot of controversy, of course. And let me start off right quick, a couple minutes. I'm not the one to rant. Usually, I critique, you know, just like everybody else, you know, critiques different things as far as sports are concerned. People get paid to be critics, and it's okay. But respectfully, though, here's the thing. I don't understand. I don't understand how people in the IWC is what they're called, or Internet Wrestling Community, to define what that is, can make the most biased, unrational, irrational, unthought about comments. It just baffles me. It just baffles me how people can make just ridiculous statements. Now, here's the thing. Go ahead and be rational. Go ahead and voice your opinion. Go ahead and critique. You know, that's fine. The WWE puts themselves out on a public forum, you know, to be critiqued. You know, I am a professional sports writer now. I write for the Bleacher Report, and, you know, I write articles to accept criticism. I'm fine with that. But to make the comments that I see sometimes on that IWC makes me realize, one, I wish people would actually watch wrestling more than want to spend time to read people's articles and just, you know, make ridiculous comments. And two, if I have ever done that, you know, pre being a sports writer and writing, covering WWE and really sports in general, if I ever done that to anybody, I apologize, sincerely apologize, because it's ridiculous to me. It's very ignorant, and I really hope that people will just really consider being rational when they make opinions. And segueing into the reason why I'm saying this, real quick, top 10 of all time. Now, my qualifications was this. You know, you have so many good promo cutters, so many honorable mentions, but at the same time, we're talking, my article was WWE, WCW, NWA. So you're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of superstars, and grabbing the top 10 is tough anyways. So with that being said, some of the honorable mentions, not all, was John Cena, The Undertaker, CM Punk, Triple H, Mick Foley, Roddy Piper, and The Ultimate Warrior when everyone was a kid, not in hindsight. You can throw Edge in there, you can throw Christian in there as really good promo cutters. But we're talking just period, though. We're talking the wrestling period. Now, here's my opinion based on watching wrestling for all of my life and watching tapes and all hundreds of hours of video, years and years and years before I was born. Number 10 is Arn Anderson, simply because, you know, he coined the Four Horsemen name, and he was just so poised and amazing on the mic. His timing was so accurate, and he just sucked people in with his with him just being so really crafty on the mic. And I was very I just really thought that Arn Anderson was just an uncrowned champion, which I definitely will write an article about coming here soon about uncrowned champions. That's a little bit overdone, but I'll voice mine. Number 9 is Jericho. simply because the whole Jericho armbar, you know, I'll go ahead and say he's my favorite wrestler now, but at the same time, you know, I'm rational enough. A lot of people thought that he should have been higher. I don't actually think he should be higher because we're talking history here. And so, you know, like I said, like I was about to say, the qualifications is that you have multiple memorable promos. You have a large in life promo capability. You have mic work that led to a main event career. You have ability to have the audience in the palm of your hand. And you have phenomenal poise and craftiness. That was my my qualifications or my conditions. So Jericho falls under that, just to, you know, for the most part. And I definitely think he makes the top 10, but not a high spot. 8 was Road Warrior Hawk because Road Warrior is arguably the best tag team ever. And Road Warrior Hawk's promos were just his voice, the passion that came between it was just phenomenal. 7 was Austin. Got a lot of criticisms from that because people thought he should have been higher. I'll go ahead and go with 6 with Rock too. They were the people of their era, you know, and I definitely think that they're some of the best ever. But you have to consider just the time frame and just. The Attitude Era was kind of set up for people like Austin and Rock to shine just because of, you know, the catchphrases and just the merchandise and things like that. The reason why I put the top 5 the way that there are because it was like your whole career a lot of times just relied on a good promo. And it's still like that, but not as much as it used to be. I mean, people used to cut promos for, you know, a considerable amount of time, and you had to captivate the audience with that promo. The promo was just kind of like the merchandise of today. You know, you had to sell your promo to make you a star. And that's the reason why I placed the top 5 the way that they are. Number 5, Jake Roberts. Amazing, amazing, amazing promo cutter. Just so cunning, so crafty, so calculated. Amazing. Number 4, Randy Savage. He was just large in life. The ooh yeah catchphrase is one of the best ever. And then, you know, 3 was Dusty Rhodes. And then, you know, just because, you know, he cut one of the best promos ever, the whole Hard Times, and you know, that was just amazing. He's actually one of my favorites of all time, and his promos are just amazing. I mean, he proved that you don't have to be the best physical condition or have some, you know, cheesy catchphrases for you to be a star. And he was one of the most charismatic wrestlers ever. Number 2 is Ric Flair, just because he had amazing, amazing promos. I put him as number 2 simply because he didn't have the impact that number 1 had. Now, as far as lining up with promos of his era, I'll give it to him for sure. Flair was there. Flair was the man in NWA. You know, like I said on my article, you know, he was kind of like Jericho. He didn't have to win every match to be over and to be a star. But at the same time, like, you know, the NWA basically rode on the Horsemen and Flair. So Flair can lose a match and just cut a promo and make people forget that he even lost. But Jericho, he doesn't have that capability because he's never really been that solo heel top guy for a long period of time. So, and then number 1, it's a no brainer to me. The IWC deems different. Hulk Hogan. I really don't even see why there's any dispute to that. But, you know, it just the catchphrases, the train of prayers, you know, eating advice, believe in yourself. This is one thing that we cannot do. We cannot see today's Hulk Hogan and let that tarnish who Hulk Hogan is as a name, as an icon, as a, you know, as a he is the biggest larger than life character in the history of the business. And he never had that ability to wrestle, but his promos were so good that he was the man. I mean, he had a leg drop for a finisher. I mean, that pretty much says it all. And so, you know, his biggest things was slamming people, you know what I mean, and hulking up. But his promos captivated the audience. It sucked everybody into what he was saying. He undoubtedly, to me, was the best promo cutter of all time. So, had some criticism, but there's so much more I got to say about that. But I'll stop it. You know, as far as and just say that I don't see any doubt of Hulk Hogan, the character, the legend, being the best promo cutter of all time. So, those are my 10.
Yeah, I really can't pick a favorite or even put them in order. I guess for me, it'd be people like, you know, Flair, Michaels, Piper, Hogan, people who have withstood decades, you know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. and I know there's younger guys who can't even say they've been around decades yet, but you think about Michaels or Flair or Piper, they could come back. And still, they've shown that they can still talk and captivate you, whether it be Flair with laughter or Michaels with just something emotional, Piper with something, I guess you could say, rowdy, no pun intended. But and then, I mean, I guess people would automatically say Rock and Austin. But I get what you're saying about their era where you had to be good on the mic. And that's cool, but for anybody automatically saying Rock should be number one, you have to think of longevity. Like, Rock has just showed in this past year, Cena got the better of him like two or three times. Definitely. So how can you put automatically just say he's number one on something he did from, what, 98, 99 to 2003, 2004, so... I need a little more longevity. I used to love Rock promos. Don't get me wrong. I knew them by heart, but I don't know. I just don't really have a clear-cut favorite or top ten. So, but you'll have that. I mean, it's an opinion.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That is the bullseye right there. You know, it's... You know, we've got to wrap up here, but, you know, it's like every time, so many times when people, you know, write stuff on you know, as sports writers, you know, people take them as gospel truth, you know, and it's not that. It's just an opinion, and, you know, and if you disagree with it, you know, do it respectfully. It's cool. You know, we create a forum for you to agree or disagree with, do it with respect. So, there's my rant and my venting out on the IWC. But, yeah, great show. We will be back next week, Flavor of the Week, and just covering Raw, SmackDown, TNA, ROH, and be sure to catch us out. Follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and Facebook. Go to Crave Wrestling and like the page and see all the articles and all the trivia and all the stuff that we're going to have up there. And thank you so much for your support. Check out my articles on Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone. Thank you so much for listening to us, and we'll be back next week. Hopefully you have a great week and enjoy the wrestling programming. Until then, do well and be well.